At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The White House hasn't had much luck with Congress lately, so it's changing things up, hoping small is better than big on a jobs plan. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by IBM, working to help mid-sized businesses become the engines of a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/engines. Marketplace Innovation Reporting is supported by the 2011 Jaguar XJ. Learn more at a local dealer or at jaguarusa.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Monday, the 17th of October. Good to have you with us. This morning found the President of the United States in Western North Carolina, Asheville to be particular, on another bus trip stumping for another plan to get the economy going again. The subject at hand this time around was his now-defeated jobs plan. Senate Republicans blocked the $447 billion package last week. So now the President said he's going to take it nice and slow, bit by bit.
Like I said, maybe they just didn't understand the whole thing. So we're breaking it up into pieces.
Up first, according to the White House, is a $35 billion package of aid to states that the administration says will help keep teachers and firefighters on the job. We've called Bill Galston at the Brookings Institute for a little insight on this. Bill, welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
First of all, the immediate effort today by Democrats in Congress, this $35 billion for the states. Why are states so important in this jobs equation?
Well, very simply, the decline in employment at the state level is pulling against and in some months counterbalancing gains in other parts of the economy. And as long as job loss continues at its current pace at the state and local level, it's going to be very difficult to get up any head of steam in the jobs market.
Seems to me, though, Bill, we've already had quite a bit of difficulty getting up a head of steam. How's $35 billion going to help?
Well, at this point, every little bit helps. States are facing some pretty urgent problems in teaching and in law enforcement and other basic services. Their tax bases still haven't recovered to where they were prior to the onset of the Great Recession, and they need all the help they can get.
As the president dismantles his jobs package and tries to get it through Congress, what do you suppose is going to come up next?
Well, I would suspect that the extension of the temporary payroll tax reduction is going to be pretty far up the line, if not absolutely the next item to come up. And it is something that I suspect will eventually receive congressional support simply because it is an idea that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's going to be very difficult for Republicans to maintain the line against a tax reduction indefinitely. It sort of cuts against their grain.
They've been doing pretty well so far.
Yes, but the White House, I think, is betting on a proposition that, as far as I know, is solidly rooted in public opinion, namely that if you look at most of the individual items in the jobs bill, they do enjoy strong public support. And they are hoping that once the spotlight turns on each of those items individually, that the political pressure on the Republicans to cooperate, at least to some extent, is going to go up. And I think they're probably right in that bet.
Some of the parts being greater than the whole, $35 billion at a time is more than $447 billion?
I don't think they're going to get to $447 billion. I don't think they think they're going to get to $447 billion. But at this point, They're aiming for a number of slices, hoping that it adds up to at least half a loaf.
Mm. Is there a chance, though, that and there have been some burblings that, you know, maybe third quarter gross domestic product will be like 3%, which is, you know, not great, but not really terrible where we've been. Is there a chance that a sign of a rising economic tide might lessen this urgency?
Possibly, but there has been an almost unrelenting drumbeat of terrible economic news for the past 4 years, and public expectations have all but collapsed. There is very little confidence in the future, and I doubt very much that one quarter of decent GDP numbers will be enough to change those perceptions and expectations. People are still going to be hurting. They're still going to want some sort of action details to come.
Details to come. So they just want something, and we'll see what the specifics are later.
Absolutely.
Bill Galston, a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Bill, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Kai.
Following the recent trend on Wall Street of Europe giveth and Europe taketh away, traders weren't exactly overjoyed to hear key German officials say today there is no way that a European debt deal is going to be done by next weekend as promised. And so down went the arrows. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Today's enormous business deal done by a company most people have never heard of is out of Houston, Texas, and an energy firm called Kinder Morgan. Kinder wants to buy one of its crosstown rivals, El Paso Corporation, for $21 billion. A lot of the analysis today has Kinder being called the ExxonMobil of pipeline companies. That is the biggest of the big. So from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports now on the year's biggest energy deal and why pipelines are so hot.
Together, these two Texas firms are a pipeline powerhouse, owning 80,000 miles of pipeline that move oil and natural gas across North America. And the key word in this deal, consultant Robert McFadden says, is natural gas.
The future of natural gas in this country is pretty good, I believe. And I think they're positioning themselves to be able to move more of it more efficiently.
And to profit off what the company is betting will be a long-running natural gas boom. Despite controversy over how it's extracted, drillers continue to tap new sources of so-called shale gas in states like North Dakota, Pennsylvania, and Texas. Edward Herz teaches energy economics at the University of Houston. He says the nation's current gas pipelines are maxed out.
We're going to need a huge build-out on the nation's pipeline infrastructure in order to get the new shale gas, or frack gas as it's called, to market.
In the Bakken shale field in North Dakota, producers reportedly burn over 20% of the gas because there's not enough pipeline to handle it. Kinder Morgan hasn't publicly committed to building new infrastructure, but a spokeswoman said today it's always looking for opportunities to meet its customers' needs. Meanwhile, it'll continue operating sort of like a giant toll road, in the company's words, collecting regular fees from oil and gas shippers who use its pipeline highway. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Election Day is still 12 months and a couple of weeks away, too far from now for a lot of voters to be paying attention. But big campaign contributors most surely are. The president's already raised $90 million to keep his job. Republicans, with eight major candidates still in the running, have raised slightly less collectively, around $83 million. It's a truth of campaign finance that financial companies are big givers. And our Washington bureau chief John Dimsdale reports this year is no different.
Companies in the finance industry, including banks, insurance, and real estate, have always been the biggest campaign contributors ever since the Center for Responsive Politics began tracking donations by industry 20 years ago. And it's still true. So far this year, the finance industry or its employees have donated one in every 10 campaign dollars. In 2008, Barack Obama attracted almost 60% of the industry's contributions. This year, the center's Michael Beckel reports a different trend.
All of the major financial players, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank of America, Mitt Romney is their number one beneficiary this year across the board.
That may be in part because Romney is one of their own, having run a major private equity firm, Bain Capital. But there could be other reasons. Political scholar Michael Barone at the American Enterprise Institute says Obama has been inviting Wall Street's scorn.
He's also taken some verbal pot shots at the finance industry and seems to be prepared to, you know, campaign against millionaires and corporate jets.
Still, it's early in the campaign. So far this year, overall donations are down 30% from the last election cycle. Larry Makinson used to head the Center for Responsive Politics. He says the financial industry always hedges its bets.
They follow the same rules, I think, in investing in politicians as they do in playing the markets. The safest place to be is on the fence, watching which side is ahead or which side is behind at a particular time, and then jumping quickly.
Like most industries, he says banks want to back a winner, so the candidate they bankroll could easily change over the next year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
According to the FCC, one out of every six cell phone users in this country has experienced what it calls bill shock. That moment when you open your wireless bill and it's more, sometimes way more, than you thought it was going to be because you've gone over your limits. So today, under no small amount of consumer and regulatory pressure, mobile companies rolled out some new voluntary guidelines to help avoid that. It's a way, they figured, to defuse customer anger and a nifty marketing opportunity as well. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Verizon, AT&T, and other cell phone companies are promising to send text alerts when you approach the limits of your voice, text, or data plan. Parents everywhere are weeping with joy, including Mike Jude, the father of a 20-something he calls a power user.
Yeah, it's like getting texts from her that say, yo, or yes, or a happy face. Yeah, you go through a lot of texts that way.
At 20 cents a pop, that can really add up. Roaming charges can add hundreds to a bill. It just so happens Jude is a senior telecommunications analyst at the consulting firm Frost & Sullivan. He says carriers will probably use these alerts to market new services, like making it easy to switch to unlimited texting. Chris Gutman-McCabe is with CTIA, the wireless trade group. His 11-year-old daughter is already signed up for unlimited texting.
I have seen already sort of notifications that say, if you want to add additional data, you can push X or Y, you can call customer service.
Cell companies are making this voluntary move so the Federal Communications Commission doesn't do it for them. Mark Cooper is with the Consumer Federation of America. It's urging consumers to complain if carriers turn the alerts into a nonstop marketing campaign.
And it will be discovered that they're trying to sell people more services rather than just alert them to the increase in the bill.
The FCC already has formal rules ready in the wings just in case the voluntary alert system doesn't work. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And now, let's do the numbers. Wall Street cashed out after 2 weeks of optimism as German officials dashed hopes that Europe's debt crisis might be resolved soon. The Dow lopped off 247 points, 2.1%, closed on this Monday at 11,397. The Nasdaq slumped 52 points, just shy of 2%, 26.14 at the bell. The S&P 500 lost 23 points, 1.9%, wrapped up at an even 1,200. Just how much worry was there today? Well, Wall Street's so-called fear gauge or volatility index, the VIX, jumped by almost 18%, the most since August. Wells Fargo was the biggest drag on the S&P 500. Disappointing earnings pushed the bank shares down more than 8% today. Other financials suffered as well. Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, both retreated more than 2.5%. Investors put a positive spin on Kinder Morgan's $21 billion buyout offer for El Paso Corporation we told you about. El Paso shares jumped nearly 25%. Kinder Morgan up almost 5%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Reputation.com, protecting online privacy by removing your personal data from the internet and stopping unwanted email. Reputation.com.
By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Labor Department releases the Producer Price Index for September. Apple and Bank of America announce their quarterly earnings numbers. And the GOP candidates face off in Sin City. Any bets on who might win? Here's a hint, not John Huntsman. He'll be holding a town hall meeting in New Hampshire. I'm Justin Ho.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. All right, so I've got a question for all you corporate road warriors out there. What's your rental car of choice? Black sedan, maybe, or an SUV? The sports car you can never afford? How about an electric vehicle? Hertz says demand for them from corporate customers has surged in the past year, so they're adding more to their rental fleets. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Hertz has offered electric vehicles for 10 months now, a few dozen Volts and Leafs in some markets. Verdict? Spokesman Rich Broom.
We've talked to Nissan, we've talked to Chevy, and we've basically said, we'll take as many as you can give us.
Hertz wants as many as 3,000, but automakers aren't cranking them out very quickly. The big demand comes from corporate travelers. Tim Dunn at JD Power says road warriors and quick trips worry less about where to recharge. They just
fly into a city, go to one or two meetings very briefly. There's not a long-range requirement for 4 or 5 days of travel.
But there are requirements at some companies to cut their carbon emissions, hence electric car rentals. But widespread consumer use? Dunn figures 10% of us will be driving EVs in 10 years. As for automakers, there is risk in showing off the latest toys at the rental counter. Some say that counter has developed a reputation for carrying leftovers no one really wants to drive. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Fahuja Singh took 8 hours to finish the Toronto Marathon this past weekend. That he finished at all is kind of amazing, though, seeing as how he's 100 years old. But no matter one's age, marathoning continues to grow in popularity, even as average finishing times get worse. More amateurs in the race is the theory. In 2009, though, more people ran marathons and the average runner got faster, perhaps because people who were out of work had a lot more time to train. Marketplace's Gregory Warner met a woman who discovered running after losing her job.
So you can start jogging.
When I lost my job in December, I did get more serious about running. I've had more time to devote to it, fortunately. And I'll be running my first full marathon this November in Philadelphia. My name is Laura Pizzuto, and most of my career I've worked in finance. I graduated college in 2003, and I basically just took the first job I could find. I knew someone that could get me a job at a mortgage company. I was a processor, I was a post-closer, a closer. I applied for other positions in the company, but unfortunately that wasn't possible. Our company had downsized, and then we were sold. Running is something that I didn't have so much trouble succeeding at. My hard work paid off, which my hard work did not pay off at a lot of my jobs. You know, promotions, raises were not available. Running was. Running, I put a lot of hard work in, and then I became faster. Well, it's 5:30 at Sheila Dennis' house, and we already have some members waiting. Good morning, ladies! I wake up very early in the morning to go to a homeless shelter in North Philadelphia. It's called Sheila Dennis' house, and I volunteer for a program called Back on My Feet. I'm at every run. I'm greeting everybody. We do have a coach on the team, but if they're not there, I lead them through stretches.
How many jumping jacks should we do today? Let's do 15. One, two, three.
I run with a large group of large personalities, and I've just really developed some great friendships with all of them. Our team captain is her name is Dawn.
My name is Dawn Estelle Garrett. I became homeless in October. I started running with Back on My Feet in December. My running joke is I run for the ice cream truck. The ice cream truck. What's the joke?
No, Dawn was not a runner.
I was 289 pounds at one point.
I'm not sure what Dawn weighs now.
170? I'm in shape now. I'm toned. I actually can run now.
Dawn ran her first 5K in Wilmington, Delaware.
I ran for 2 miles straight. Then I got weak. I wanted to give up.
It's a challenging course. Wilmington was pretty hilly.
And the finish line was all uphill. And I'm like, no way. And my teammates were cheering.
We ran the whole 5K around Dawn. And she talks about when she runs that, you know, she needs to hear the Rocky theme song.
The Eye of the Tiger, that song.
We started to sing it to her.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm like, all right, yeah. Dun, dun, dun. And I'm thinking of the music in my head, and I'm like, all right, I could do it. And it was beautiful. I crossed the finish line, I had tears in my eyes. Because I normally start things, but I never finish them. Like jobs, I'll start a job and then I'll become dissatisfied with it and then I'll just be like, I'll move on to the next thing. I don't want to do that, you know? But I don't want to give up and be defeated. I'm just going to keep going forward. I want to complete some things in my life.
That's an old door. We're in the computer/guest room of my mother's house where I do my job searching. So their computer is a lot faster than my laptop. I'm looking mostly on idealist.org. I didn't care so much about those finance jobs. It wasn't a fulfilling career, and I really want to do something that I believe in. Okay, so this position is actually, okay, it's part-time case manager to victims of domestic violence. With every job, there's always something where, you know, I have to stretch a little bit. I do have a bachelor's degree. I'm not proficient in Spanish. I don't have prior case management experience. Some experience working in domestic violence issues. I haven't worked in them, but I do have a sensitivity to that. So this position, I think I can definitely give them a shot. I'll start working on my cover letter. Uncertainty is, it's a worry of mine. What if my mother loses her job again and I can't live here? And I have these thoughts, especially during my long runs. I had a half marathon 2 weeks ago. I had just an amazing, amazing run. I had a PR, personal record. I broke 2 hours by 6 seconds. And very dramatic. I have my medal here. You can hear it clanging. I feel really emotional. I just never thought that I would be able to do that, be able to run that fast. And I always say, you know, if you look at my situation on paper, it's not great. You know, I'm laid off. I live at home. It's okay. A finance person, they looked at me, my loan application, they would just reject. But I just feel so much more alive. And I just had these deep thoughts as I was running. I'm like, you can really do anything. You may not feel like that all the time, but if you really want something, you're making it happen. I mean, you're making it happen right now. You just feel unstoppable.
That story was produced for us by our healthcare reporter, Gregory Warren. American consumers being the fickle bunch that we are, it's not much more than folly to try to predict what the holiday shopping season is going to be like this year. Of course, that doesn't mean the experts aren't trying. The latest thinking is sales will be up slightly over last year. Nothing like what was expected when a recovery seemed to be on the way, though. So retailers are trying everything they can to make it easier for consumers to spend. Walmart's bringing back holiday layaway today as companies mix old buying tricks with new. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Walmart says its layaway program is back by popular demand.
I wish you guys had layaway.
Well,
because, you know, I could pay a little at a time.
But actually,
my kids
we
would be like, awesome!
Could be awesome for Walmart, too. Marianne Bickel directs the Center for Retailing at the University of South Carolina. She says layaway gets customers to the cash register much more quickly.
You pull the trigger faster because you say, oh, well, I have 12 weeks to pay on it.
Or, in Walmart's case, 2 months. Purchases have to be paid off by mid-December, and there are fees. Plus, layaway's only available on certain items. Kmart, Sears, Best Buy, and Toys R Us offer similar programs. Bickel says consumers using layaway are more likely to buy more.
It says you can look at big-ticket items without having sticker shock.
Retailers are worried about a different kind of sticker shock. Megan Donadio is a retail strategist with Kurt Salmon. She says retailers ordered their holiday merchandise months ago when the economy looked stronger. Now they're afraid they'll be stuck with too much merchandise they'll have to mark down. So they're trying to lock in purchases as quickly as they can.
It's really about anything a retailer can do to enhance the convenience levels for the consumer.
In some higher-end stores, Donadio says retailers are bringing the cash registers to customers. This cuts down on waiting and thinking time. Some Nordstrom sales associates carry iPod touches to ring up sales anywhere in the store. The European chain One Piece is using iPads. The chain sells...
It's like a one-piece sweatsuit kind of...
That's what it is.
Louise Olson manages the Los Angeles store. Her iPad lets her close the deal while shoppers are still in the dressing room.
I was wondering what that thing was for the iPad.
It's our register.
This is cool. This is so
cool. Olson says that cool factor keeps the sales relationship going.
You know, when you have a new product and they still find it very interesting just while you're ringing them up, you're still entertaining them, and I find that very helpful, yeah.
Social psychologist Phil Mazzocco of Ohio State University Mansfield says these conveniences help brick-and-mortar stores compete with online retailers.
Part of the appeal of actually being in a store is that you can pick up your product and walk right out of the store with it.
By the end of this week, JCPenney stores will include wrapped shops, where customers can quickly pick up gifts and go. Mazzocco says if a retailer
can grab you before that part of your brain kicks in, I'm going to increase the chance that you're just going to sort of impulsively purchase that product.
And for retailers, a little impulse could go a long way this holiday season. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by FreshBooks, an online invoicing service for small businesses designed to help save time, get paid fast, and make invoicing easy. More at FreshBooks.com. By The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Their new book, How to Eat Weekends, is available now at bookstores nationwide. And by Putnam Investments, offering total return strategies designed to match your goals. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today just to prove not all mergers and acquisitions are mercenary and money-grubbing. The Wall Street Journal reports today that Mattel is in talks to buy Thomas the Tank Engine. If you've had small children, been near small children, or basically seen any small child at any point in the past, what, like 20 years, you've probably heard of Thomas and Gordon and Percy and all the rest. All right, here's the mercenary part. Mattel is going to pay almost $1 billion for the company, $790 million for Hit Entertainment over in the UK. So there you go. All right, that's Marketplace from APM, American Public Media, on this Monday. Today, the Dow dropped 247 points, 2.1%. The NASDAQ carved off 52 points, just shy of 2%. The S&P 500 lost 23 points, 1.9%. Our producers include Avishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time back here, high-stakes testing and the teaching landscape.
The students got the easy questions wrong, but the hard questions right. That was the greatest smoking gun, it turned out.
Cheaters never prosper. Another installment of Freakonomics Radio coming your way. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.